Hi, I'm Ben Rizzuto, wealth strategist at Janus Henderson Investors. For 90 years, we've worked to help clients achieve superior financial outcomes and fulfill our purpose of investing in a brighter future together. To learn more, go to janushenderson.com.
What diverging data can tell us about the health of the U.S. labor market?
You have to kind of take everything in its totality, look at the general directions, and say, we don't know for sure what's happening right now, but we can see that there's some very conflicting data here, and it might be a cause for concern.
And Twitter and Elon Musk face off in court. Plus, copper prices are down. Should we be worried? It's Tuesday, July 19th. I'm Anne-Marie Fratoli with The Wall Street Journal. Here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. Russia has ordered its forces to target military equipment supplied by Western countries to Ukraine, including long-range missiles and artillery weapons. Russia's defense minister told troops to target the weapons to prevent shelling in areas in eastern Ukraine held by Russian forces. That's according to Russia's defense ministry. A recent shipment of advanced Western weapons has helped Ukraine fend off Russia's invasion in some areas. But Western officials say it's unclear whether it will enable Ukraine to turn the tide of the war. Ukraine's First Lady Olena Zelenska is in Washington opening a round of high-level meetings that includes a planned address to Congress later this week. On Monday, Zelenska met with Secretary of State Antony Blinken, State Department spokesman Ned Price.
This really was an opportunity for the secretary to underscore the United States' comprehensive and enduring commitment to the people of Ukraine. He had an opportunity to commend the First Lady's work to support the many civilians, Ukrainian civilians, who have been in different ways impacted by this brutal war against Ukraine.
The White House says Zelenska is due to hold talks with First Lady Jill Biden later today. Zelenska's visit signals the heightened push by Kyiv to seek more military aid and political backing as Russia's war in Ukraine nears the five-month mark. U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen is encouraging a reorientation of world trade called friend-shoring, where the U.S. and its allies trade more closely with each other and less with rivals, reducing the dependence on any one producer. Speaking in South Korea, Yellen also called for reducing global reliance on China for critical components like semiconductors. Yellen is wrapping up her first trip to Asia as Treasury Secretary. Lawyers for Twitter and Elon Musk will be in court in Delaware today, where they're expected to argue about the timetable for the social media company's lawsuit against Musk for pulling out of a $44 billion takeover deal. Twitter is seeking to fast-track the case, arguing that Musk has left the business and its shareholders in limbo. Musk has argued that he needs more time to investigate spam and fake accounts on the platform. Lawyers expect a quick decision by the judge, who could announce her ruling as soon as the hearing ends on Twitter's request for an expedited schedule. And IBM saw 9% growth in sales in the second quarter, but the company said shutting down its business in Russia and the strength of the U.S. dollar weighed on results. IBM and other tech companies saw an early boon during the pandemic with more people working remotely from home. But recent weeks have brought signs that market dynamics are changing and tech companies are looking to adapt. Prices of copper used in everything from buildings to cars have collapsed in recent weeks. On the London Metal Exchange, copper is trading around $7,000 per metric ton, down 26% from the beginning of June and a stunning 32% since the end of March. Joining me now with more on this is our markets reporter, Miga Mandivia. Hi, Miga. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So the slide in copper prices began after Beijing imposed widespread COVID-19 lockdowns in April. Could copper peg hopes on a rebound in China?
It looks unlikely for now. Chinese GDP data that came out on Friday for the quarter was not great. The economy did expand a little bit. It missed expectations. One of the biggest factors was the property market is in downturn, and there doesn't seem any light at the end of the tunnel for that market. And property market is one of the biggest drivers for copper demand in China. So it seems unlikely that China will be able to, help the copper prices kind of see a rebound globally. China obviously has this COVID zero policy. So even if like a couple of cases, whole cities are locked down, which has affected its manufacturing activity. And once the manufacturing activity gets affected, demand for copper goes down. So that is another reason that it looks unlikely that China will be able to help copper pull up in this market.
So what can copper tell us about where the world economy is heading?
Copper is kind of a forecaster for the world economy. It's very sensitive to macroeconomic factors. There doesn't seem any positive sentiment in the market right now. Europe is struggling. There's massive energy insecurity in Europe right now because of the Russian gas issue. If the Russian gas supply goes down towards winter, then the continent will have to ration gas, which will hit its manufacturing activity. If the manufacturing activity gets hit in Europe, then we can expect GDP to slow down, copper demand to slow down. So it seems like US is heading towards a recession. Fed is increasing interest rates because the inflation remains stubbornly high. So if US heads towards a recession, there is a manufacturing downturn in Europe and property markets continues to struggle in China. And adding to that, there is a COVID zero policy. There doesn't seem like anything for, you know, copper to hold on to right now in terms of macroeconomic factors for us to expect any sort of kind of rebound.
That's Wall Street Journal reporter Miga Mondivia. Miga, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
Coming up, how's the U.S. labor market doing? It depends on which data you're looking at. Making sense of mixed data after the break.
Hello, I'm Laura Castleton, U.S. Head of Portfolio Construction and Strategy at Janus Henderson Investors. Is a brighter future possible? At Janus Henderson, we think it is. For 90 years, we've worked to help clients achieve superior financial outcomes and fulfill our purpose of investing in a brighter future together. We know that this means our thinking and our investments are helping to shape millions of brighter futures for the next 90 years and beyond. To learn more, go to janushenderson.com.
The U.S. added workers at a strong pace over the past 3 months. It's also losing workers. The survey of employers shows non-farm payrolls growing by an average of 375,000 jobs a month over the past 3 months. The household survey shows the economy losing an average of 116,000 jobs a month during the same span. So what's happening? Joining me now to discuss this is Wall Street Journal economics reporter Jeffrey Sparshot. Hi, Jeff. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So, Jeff, payroll numbers show pretty steady growth, but household survey numbers show the economy losing jobs. Can you make sense of the divergence there for us?
Yeah, so in the Labor Department's monthly employment report, there's two separate surveys. One is known as the Establishment Survey, and that's a survey of businesses. And one is called the Household Survey, and that's a survey of people. The Establishment Survey tends to be more closely followed because it's a little bit more accurate. It has a bigger sample size and a smaller margin of error. But some economists like to follow the Household Survey at inflection points in the economy, at turning points in the economy, because they think it captures changes a little bit better, especially if you average it out over a few months. I mean, just looking at one individual month, probably not the best idea. But what the household survey tells us right now is that over the past 3 months, the economy has lost on average 116,000 jobs per month, which could be a little bit concerning.
What details can the housing survey tell us that the broader jobs report may not? Why are economists looking at this closely?
Sure. So one thing that the Establishment Survey is a little bit slower to do is catch up on the creation or the closure of firms. And the Household Survey also seems to capture people kind of at the margins of the labor force a little bit better. People who work in private households, people who might drop in and out of the labor force, people who might work a little bit more informally, things like that. The household seems to capture that a little bit quicker. And so we might be able to see turning points a little bit faster. And it might suggest that some of the really strong non-farm payroll numbers are a little bit overstated. The other thing, too, is that the Establishment Survey is revised. It'll get revised twice. And at turning points in the economy, so when the economy starts growing again, when it comes out of recession, the Establishment Survey tends to understate job growth. When you're going into a recession or into a slowdown, it tends to overstate job growth. So that's another factor to watch, which way the revisions start going when we start to get more establishment surveys and more employment reports in the coming months.
Are there other indicators in line with what the most recent housing survey shows?
Yeah, if you look just at broad economic growth, I mean, GDP contracted in the first quarter and estimates for the second quarter are looking very, very tepid growth at best, possibly a second contraction for a second straight quarter. If you look at job openings, they hit record highs in recent months, but they've been coming off of those record highs. If you look at initial unemployment claims, they hit the lowest level since 1968 in March, but they've been trending upwards since. If you look at kind of private sector surveys, kind of nerdy surveys that economists and people like me follow, the Institute for Supply Management, there's a survey of purchasing managers they do, and in manufacturing and the service sectors, it seems like employment has been contracting the past few months. So, and anecdotally, we've been getting a lot of reports from, especially in the tech sector, that companies are rescinding offers, they're slowing hiring, they're stopping hiring, sometimes they're letting people go. So the vibe is kind of out there that hiring might be slowing a little bit. But again, you have to kind of take everything in its totality, look at the general directions and say, we don't know for sure what's happening right now, but we can see that there's some very conflicting data here and it might be a cause for concern.
So given those mixed results, taken all together, what can the data tell us right now and what does it mean for the Fed?
Right. Well, since the pandemic hit, it's been really hard to know what's happening with the economy and it's been even harder to forecast. I mean, people have been consistently incorrect in trying to assess this is what's happening now and this is where we're going with their calls on inflation, with their calls on how quickly employment would be able to recover, with just a lot of different factors that are going out there. And it's because it's very unprecedented. I mean, it's not because people aren't trying or making genuine good faith efforts. It's just because it's very difficult to know right now. So it makes it very difficult for private forecasters and it makes it difficult for the Federal Reserve as well. And so they're more worried about inflation than unemployment right now. They still think the labor market is strong. And so they're going to raise interest rates when they meet later this month, probably by 0.75 percentage point, once again, for the second meeting in a row. And they're hoping that that will send the message that, okay, we're serious about inflation, that'll bring inflation expectations down, that will slow the economy a little bit, but not too much, that will help cool inflation. And they're going for a soft landing. Whether they get that, and nobody really knows at this point. There's a lot of economists who are very skeptical. There's a lot of people who are very worried about a recession. So there's definitely concern out there.
That's Wall Street Journal economics reporter Jeffrey Sparshot. Jeff, thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you.
And finally, roasting whole chickens is nothing new for many cooks. But rampant inflation is introducing a new flock to the practice. Wall Street Journal national politics reporter Josh Jamerson has more on how some savvy consumers, egged on by high costs, are looking for ways to save money.
I just talked to a couple of people for this story who, as they notice prices rising, would pick up that package of boneless, skinless chicken breasts and notice that maybe it was approaching $10 and underneath it was a whole chicken for maybe $14. And just the economic sense of, wait, I can get a couple of breasts for maybe 10 bucks and a whole chicken for maybe 13 to 15 bucks. Maybe I'll just try to go for this big bird and make it work and make it last longer.
And that's what's news for Tuesday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
This episode is brought to you by Vanta. Vanta's trust management platform helps you quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for SOC 2, ISO 27001, and more. Learn how by watching Vanta's on-demand demo at vanta.com/WSJ.